Welcome to the Innate Vitality Code podcast, your source of science-backed information and inspiration on holistic healing, building resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, and positive psychology neuroscience nerd. For over 20 years, I've been healing and teaching in my wellness practice, in the media, on stages, and around the world, as part of my soul's mission to end suffering and raise the consciousness on the planet. This podcast does not provide medical advice or psychotherapy. Consult your healthcare provider before implementing what you hear on this show. All right. Welcome, dear friends, to another edition in our Sacred Medicine series, where we are exploring a variety of substances from the natural and plant world, these sacred allies, that's how we consider them, gifts from nature that are helping us humans to evolve and to grow and to wake up. I am very happy to be sharing this because for the very first several years of my own sacred medicine journey, I didn't share about these things out loud. I wasn't telling people that I was going on journeys, mainly because I was a doctor and I was on TV in the United States. And because these substances at the time were illegal, of course, I wasn't going to be telling people that I was, you know, going on journeys. But my journey in this world began with MDMA, and that was in the early 2000s. There were people in the Washington, D.C. area, therapists who were using MDMA in couples therapy and people with depression. And for me, it was like, wait, what? And I was so curious that I started looking into the research, only to find that, yes, there had been decades of research using things like MDMA. And then I started digging and seeing LSD was used clinically. And then having done work with addiction, you know, working with people in substance use recovery, I was amazed to find out that Bill W., you know, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, had also had experiences with LSD and encouraged people to trip with LSD because he said it was very similar to his spontaneous, well, it wasn't spontaneous. It was very similar to the spiritual awakening that Bill W. had when he went to the hospital for alcohol treatment. They used belladonna and some other things that produce really painful psychedelic experiences because there's all this purging and such. But, you know, Bill W. Had his wife, one of his clergy members, his secretary, and other people trying LSD because he found that having the spiritual awakening was really the key to his own recovery and thought that it could be helpful. It didn't go well because some people thought, no, this is, you're going to be like the hippies. This is not going to be good for addicts. So a lot of people in the recovery community don't want to even talk about psychedelics. But, you know, there's a lot more research on coming online about how psychedelics are helping people with substance use and eating disorder recovery. So that's just a little bit about my background. But I want to share kind of how I got into ayahuasca before we introduce Chen, and you get to hear from her experience as well. Definitely some good stuff to be shared. So I mentioned that I, many of you already know this, I lived with depression for quite a long time. And while things got better after my spontaneous out-of-body experience in 2005, when I was in the postpartum period, I kind of had this re-triggering of really dark, dark moods and dark energy. I think it was this transition into being a mother and transition into out of traditional medical practice and getting whatever I was stepping onto a whole new path. And someone suggested that I go to a shamanic retreat. It was a trance dance retreat that was hosted in Sedona, Arizona. And so there were no substances. It was drumming. It was breath work. It was intense. And so for my first sort of shamanic experience, it was really mind opening. especially because the shaman understood what I had experienced in my near-death experience. He normalized it. He was the first person that was like, yeah, this happens in all sorts of rites of passage if you look in different countries and cultures. And then he started sharing that he ran ayahuasca retreats in the jungle in Hawaii. And so I was fascinated, like, oh, wow, you could take a plant and it could create these expanded states of consciousness and seeing things and having conversations with, you know, non-physical entities and so on. Unfortunately, he ran his retreats at night in the jungle, not in a like retreat center. And he said that you had to dig your own hole for where you would puke and maybe even shit. And I was like, out at night in the jungle, puking and shitting in a hole with people I don't know, taking a hallucinogen. No. I was like, that does not sound like what I'm ready for. So it was many years later when I happened to be in Peru. I was on another spiritual retreat, and at the retreat center, they were bringing in a medicine woman, an ayahuasquera from a long lineage of ayahuasqueros who had been trained in the jungle. And while we were close to the jungle, we did have a maloca. It was at a retreat center, so we didn't have to be out in the dark with bugs and who knows what. And that first ayahuasca experience for me was, it was literally mind opening. I was kind of scared, but I had already done so much research after that first call that I refused, that I thought, you know, if this is quite possibly going to change my life like my near-death experience did, I'm open to it. And I happened to have the most beautiful experience. Just hearing the Icaros, these songs that the ayahuasqueros were singing, and being transported into this expanded state of feeling safe enough to let down my guard to see what this medicine was going to bring forth. You know, they say that you're really in relationship with this sacred vine, these plants. I mean, it's a mixture of two plant species along with others that create this, you know, expanded state of consciousness. And so for me, it was, I mean, it was fascinating. And in that first ayahuasca experience, I connected with the spirit of my mother. And for me, that was a big deal, because at that time she was still kind of with us, but she was already kind of disappearing with dementia. And so for me, it was amazing to connect with her soul. And I just remember crying and like being able to mourn the fact that I was losing my mother. But also the medicine showed me this scene, because I also started apologizing to my sister. At that time, my sister was the sole caretaker to my mom. And in that expanded state, I just felt so much compassion for my sister. And I remember trying to apologize. And in that ayahuasca experience, everything, I won't say it's super crystal clear, but the clarity that I got was, I was told by the medicine that my mom and my sister, they have a karmic relationship that has nothing to do with me. And so even though I was always trying to be the peacemaker or trying to intervene and trying to fix and whatever, it was like, that's not your role. They have a specific relationship. And that gave me a little bit more peace, not immediately, but over time, I was able to see, especially as my mom's health declined and my sister was always there for her. So that first experience with ayahuasca was, yeah, it was magical. It was reassuring, and it opened me up. 2 years later, I had the opportunity to sit with the medicine again, this time in Iceland. I'll share those stories separately with you. But it, for me, the relationship was always one of deep reverence and respect, because I had learned very early on that the medicine could take you on a ride that you may not even be ready for, that you may not even like. So I had fear, but it was also respect. It was like, you take this thing very, very seriously. And the idea of all of the vomiting and the pain was put into context for me in that it's a purge. It's not just that, yes, this plant actually causes you to purge, but it's also an energetic and maybe even an emotional or spiritual purge. And for any of you who have been kind of repressed, if you've ever been one of the people that like swallows things or locks things away, to be able to finally release, not just with the vomit, but with the crying, with the yawning, with any of it, it's really, really powerful. So one of I'm still waiting for Chen, my friends. So trying to find out where my dear friend is. We were just texting 2 days ago and thought that we were all fully aligned, but I'm seeing that we're not. Anyway, one of the things that some of you know is that my whole name change, my identity shift, was also something that came as a result of sitting in ceremony with this great mother, ayahuasca. And perhaps we can get into that if you're curious. But it was definitely something that it's just a lot of respect. So while we are waiting for Chen, and I'm going to try to connect with her through a different means, forgive me as I put my video off for just a second. I'm going to invite you, if you have questions, to either start typing them into the chat or raise your hand, and I'd love to take your questions. Anyone? No one wants to share or ask a question?
I can share.
Great, go right ahead.
So the last ayahuasca trip I took, I was saying mama, it's like mother in my mother tongue, mama ayahuasca. And I kept wondering, what does that mean? And I also miss my mom because she has passed away long time ago. And then I have been in other Zoom calls where I heard people referring to ayahuasca as mother ayahuasca. So I'm still curious how you understand that. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah. Well, the naming, calling it the great mother or grandmother, you know, abuela in Espanol, people call her the great mother or the grandmother because she does, this plant combination does have a feminine energy to her. And so people do feel like she's feminine. And sorry, I'm still trying to get in touch with Penn. I'm wondering if with the time changes, and Chen is normally in Portugal. Sorry, dear ones, I'm coming back. All right. So when we look at some of the cultures that have a deep relationship with ayahuasca, we often hear these stories about how the medicine men and the hunters would use ayahuasca to have these visionary experiences, either to be able to intervene for healing or to find game as they were hunting, and also to bring the community into right relationship with each other or with the earth. And so this idea that this plant could speak and that it had the energy, a feminine energy, is what led so many people to so many cultures talking about her as grandmother, because it's not like a young woman. It's like this wise elder being that that shared wisdom, and sometimes, you know, in a painful way. You know, one of those sassy grannies that sometimes doesn't tell you what you want to hear, but tells you what you need to hear. You know, that's often how they describe it, and so that's why many of us call her the great mother or the grandmother. And you do have respect, because when we talk about being in right relationship, it's about right relationship with the medicine, so that she has access in a respectful way to your own psyche. So for those of you who have had these experiences where you're speaking in another language, or you're connecting with relatives either still on the planet but far away, or people who've passed on, those are very common experiences. So I'm sorry, I was multitasking. So if I didn't answer your question, please let me know. So I see your question here, Caroline, about what would be an appropriate time frame to receive Mother Aya from the last time that you sat with her. You know, it all depends on intention. We always talk about intention. Part of right relationship is like, you know, why are you potentially seeking this this relationship? I know you know about this, Caroline, but we often talk about people who are retreat hopping, that they have this amazing experience and they're already booking the next one. And that's often a red flag in our world, because we want people to have time to integrate. So if you had an experience, say 2 years ago, do you feel like you've integrated those insights with whatever the great mother brought to you? Were you able to move forward? Now, maybe on your healing journey, you do have more questions and you're feeling that call. You know, it should be less an intellectual thing and more of a intuitive thing. If you're healing, feeling the call, or hearing the call, you know, hearing about a retreat, or you're just feeling like, oh, that was such a deep experience and now I'm ready, I think 2 years would be fine. It might actually be that you would do this two times or more in a year. But the people who are doing that are generally called for sitting with the medicine or doing what is called dieta. Some people who feel like they've been called to do deep healing will go to the jungle. One of my dear colleagues left, I think, April 2nd, and she's spending 3 months doing a dieta with a family. And so they're sitting with ayahuasca several times in a week over this 3 month period. And then she'll come back to the US and then she'll go back again. So it depends on what you're doing this for. If you are doing this for your own healing journey, then make sure that you've integrated what you experienced the first time around. And so if it's 9 months or 12 months later and you're feeling ready and respectful, then that could be quite enough. So I see your hand is up. Noemi, do you want to ask a question?
Yes. Since we have a little bit of time that we didn't count on here, you mentioned languages, and that brought up for me something that I've been kind of wondering about. You know, several of us here are, at least several of us are in a multilingual life experience, and so am I. And so I'm wondering if language comes into play in these experiences with medicine, and how that plays out with in this inner landscape, because I grew up in a Hungarian setting for the most part, and a lot of my early negative experiences have been in my mother language, and a different set of negative experiences in the majority language, which was Romanian. And now I'm here doing my healing in English. And so it just struck me as an interesting question to ask, is how does language connect these realms? You know, and how is it different in different language settings?
That's a great question. I find that there are a lot of people who say that they have experiences speaking languages that they don't think they actually knew in this lifetime, which can be a whole new thing. Returning to speaking in their mother tongue, which could be very interesting. So a lot of us are, if you don't speak Portuguese or Spanish, you're going to be kind of in this foreign setting because the Icaros are usually in a language that you don't necessarily know. I mean, most of us know at least a few little Spanish words, so you might get the feeling, but it can transport you. And so being sort of devoid of your mother tongue can be really helpful. One of my last journeys in Costa Rica, I don't know for sure if it was a real language, but I was connected to this very masculine, king-like energy from somewhere on the African continent. And I remember kind of like speaking to him, and it was very interesting. But at some point, I just wondered, like, well, if I really am connecting, what am I getting? Because it felt like a conversation going back and forth, and I was getting these kind of downloads about things that needed to happen in my life. So I think that language is pretty extraordinary. So I think it'll be something for you to tell us when you have the experience.
Okay.
So
Thank you.
you're so welcome. I do want to introduce our special guest. Cookie, do you mind waiting on your question? Just remember it, write it down, or pop it in the chat. So I had the pleasure of interviewing Chen Lizra in our Real Self-Love movement way back in 2017, because she came so highly recommended with helping people tap into their somatic intelligence. And I love her. I adore her. I adore her so much that I even suggested that my daughter work with her for getting into the body. And over the last few years, Chen and I have done interviews together, sort of been sparring partners in supporting each other's businesses. And most recently, we've been sharing kind of what this great mother has done for us in our own lives. And I would love for you to meet the lovely Chen Lizra, who is from Israel, but I think today is back in Portugal. She's been helping millions of people around the world through the media. Her TED Talk, I think at last time I checked, had 11 million views. And now, after years of sitting with the grandmother, she is also facilitating retreats. And I've popped information about that in the chat. Chen, thank you so much for joining us on this Sacred Medicine series. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm so sorry I'm late. There was a confusion of the hours, so I suddenly saw myself like, oh my God, it's not like in half an hour. So I popped in here quickly, and I love and adore you too. So it's wonderful to meet part of your community. We always support each other so much, and it's amazing how our paths kind of like grew in the same direction over time. And there's so much to share. So I'm so happy to be here, and let's jump dive in right away.
Yeah, all right, let's do it. Well, I'm curious if you want to just share how you got called to the medicine. At the beginning of the call, I shared with our audience how my first call way back in 2007, I said no, the typical hero's journey. I said no to the call, and then years later, while I was in Peru, I said yes, and it was a beautiful beginning of a relationship. What was your first calling to ayahuasca?
Well, I think that Mother Aya has been summoning me for a while, but I didn't really know that she was summoning. And when I say summoning, you get the curiosity and you're interested, but there's a yes, there's a no, and that's the summoning. The summoning is like that. I didn't even know that I was being summoned. I didn't even know that I could call it curiosity, but I ended up going to Rhythmia to teach because someone told me about the place in two it was in 2018, and I was really happy to go and teach, and I didn't know anything about ayahuasca. And part of the whole thing, they said you could do the ceremonies, and my first reaction was like, I don't know if I should. There was so much resistance to it because my mom was mentally sick, I was afraid of the chemical imbalance. I was terrified of doing ayahuasca, actually. And I remember asking them about it. And I went to Jerry, the owner, and I said to him, and he said, "You will know if you need to." I was like, "No, not the answer I'm looking for." So I went to the shaman, and she said to me, "Oh, you're just putting fears into your mind." I said, "Nope, not the answer I'm looking for." I just like went to the third person. And the third one was the ones that I really needed. He was the one that had the medical knowledge. And I said to him, "Look, like, I'm worried because my mom had, it was manic depressive. I'm tired of everybody telling me it's going to be fine. You know, last year my body got locked in because I have, well, I didn't know at the time, but I said that my body locked in for 5 days in fight or flight. I couldn't get out. I knew what was going on. I was aware of it, but I couldn't get out of it. I don't know if I should do it, and I don't know if I'm going to be okay." And that's when the real answers that I needed came in, and he was very knowledgeable, and he just said to me, "Chen, what type of manic depressive was she, number one or two?" I said, "How do you know?" And he started to explain to me. I was like, "Okay, here's a knowledgeable person who knows." And then I explained to him, and he explained to me about the different ones. And he said, "Look, like, the chances of you being, you know, getting triggered by that are 4%. So you don't have to worry." And I looked at him dead straight in the eyes, and I just said, "Can you promise me I'm not one of the 4%? And he stopped dead in his tracks, and he said, "No, I cannot." I said, "Okay, what happens if I'm one of the 4% and my body gets reactive and I get stuck again?" And he said, "We're going to give you a serotonin injection, and within half an hour, you're going to be back." I said, "Okay, that I can trust, you know, because you know what you're doing." And that was what gave me the initial, you know, trust to even take that step, because I was terrified. And he said to me, "Look, like, you can start with something that's not the medicine. It's, you know, something that's natural, but not, it's much more mild, and then you'll be in the room and you'll start to feel how everybody's like purging, but everybody's calm, and you'll build trust, and that might be a better way for you to start." And I said, "Okay, that's a way that I feel safe enough to start." And the first night I sat there, and it's like I took whatever they sprayed into my mouth, and it didn't do anything most of the night, but I heard people purging and puking and crying and laughing and whatnot, and it just felt safe. And you're like, when your body feels the safety of everyone, and everybody's going through something so intense, but you feel that they're safe and that they're okay. I came to the shaman and I said, like nothing's happening. She said, "Do you want to take the medicine?" I said, "Do I want to take the medicine?" She looked at me and she said, "Yes, you do." I said, "Okay, then just a little bit, you know, so if it doesn't work or something, I can come out of it fairly quickly." And that's it. You know, I've been in since. That was 4 nights. The second night I took 3 dosages. 2 is a lot, but 3, like, and it was one of the most life-changing experiences. Then it was a no, no, no in my body for a couple of years till 2022. And then it was a yes. And I was in with maestros from Peru in Portugal. I flew into Portugal. I was living in Israel, and I did 3 journeys then. And then it was a no, 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 no. I had so many opportunities. My body was saying no. And then in 2024, it was 3 times yes in 1 year. And by the third time I was facilitating, Mother Aya was like sending me on a journey and preparing me. And I was like, "Okay, surrendering, whatever you tell me, I'm doing," you know? So it's been nothing short of miraculous, nothing short of super difficult, because these journeys are not for the faint of heart, but I wouldn't change a thing. I'm so grateful, and I'm in so many moments where are just pinch me moments where I can't even believe that I'm where I am, doing what I'm doing and being there for people the way I get to be now. It's just, what an honor.
Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting to hear how you were just like, "Nope, I want more. I want more. I want that clarity before I even go on this journey." That makes so much sense. And I'm grateful to hear that you did have these good experiences. Before we get into how you have now added facilitation and what that calling was, because it's one thing for us to be called to sit in the with the medicine, to develop a personal relationship for our own healing. And as I see it, it's quite another when you are called to facilitate. I have not had that call, and I'm grateful. The mushrooms called me. I even those I said no to initially. I was like, "Oh, this is so cliche. People who say, 'Oh, now I'm going to serve.'" And I said no and no and no until after another journey, the mushrooms were like, "Dude, how many ways you want us to tell you? You're meant to be facilitating." And it was like, okay, I humbly humbly accept, and had a great teacher to bring me on the path. But one of the things that you and I shared back when I was in the same space, Rhythmia, in 2021, I went for my birthday. And, you know, we talk a lot about intentions, that with whatever sacred ally you're working with, including microdosing, you go in with intentions, and then you're supposed to let them go, because as we say in this world, the medicine doesn't give you what you want, it gives you what you need.
What you need.
Yeah. And so I went into one of these journeys. I was like you, I was the teacher. I was the, you know, guest teacher that week, and they invited me to sit with the medicine. So I did. And one of the nights, I went in with the intention to find out what was blocking me in my business. And for me, ayahuasca, of course, it's very physical, but most of my insights come in visions, like seeing a little vignette, like a movie scene, and getting understanding, and also hearing a message super clear. And so on that night, I asked, you know, before I took the cup, I was like, show me what blocks me in business. And I got three very clear indications. And she also showed me what I needed to do to go beyond them. That was brilliant. So after that huge purge, and I can share that in another call, y'all, if you're curious. But after that, I was feeling good. And I remember going out on the lawn and looking at the sky and feeling good. And then they called for another cup. So I took the fourth cup. And this time I said, okay, show me what blocks me in love. And at this point, normally, like I said, I see visions, but it wasn't a vision. This time I heard just a voice, and it said, you do everything based on optics. You know, how many of you out there have ever had, if you were single, you had a list of the qualities you wanted in your beloved, and maybe you wanted him to be a certain height or yada, yada. So I instantly was kind of like, what do you mean? I base it on optics. Are you trying to say I can't have someone who's handsome? Because of course, handsome was on my list, you know? And it was like, then it came in, it was like, no. Then she showed me this like 3D rendering. It was like, you look at how it's going to look from all these different angles, because you're concerned about what other people think instead of. And I was like, oh shit. And then I said, okay, so how am I supposed to do this? And the medicine said, you do it based on the feeling. How do you want to feel in this love relationship? And that I also knew, because I had a list. It was like, oh, I want to feel adored, and I want to adore them. I want to feel respected, and I want to respect them. So I went through all of these kind of feelings in my body. Like, how would it feel to be in this loving relationship? And all of a sudden, I saw this silhouette. So I couldn't see faces, but I just saw this silhouette. And I could see all of this feeling energy going between us, that feeling of love and respect and joy and passion and playfulness. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want. And when I came out of it, the message was, my partner exists somewhere on this planet. Mm-hmm. So I had like ultimate confidence. And so when I got back to France, I was on this dating app and came across a profile. And at first I was like, no, they're not smiling. Because literally, y'all, I had this rule on the dating app. If they're not showing their teeth, then skip them. Yes, that's the optics that were in me before. So I remember like about to skip this profile. And then it was like, I heard the medicine say, what did I tell you? So I like scrolled through the profile and tuned in. And I was like, okay, there's something here. So I swiped whatever it is, left or right. So I accepted this profile. And a few hours later, I heard the phone ding with that little notification, and we connected. And his first message to me was like, unlike any other French person who's ever spoken to me ever and since. And in our first video call, I was just like, there's something weird about this. This is really weird. This feels really weird. By our second video call, just 3 days later, I was starting to get hot, and I was like pulling off my robe, just kind of talking on the phone. And then all of a sudden it hit me. I was like, I had that same feeling as when I was in that ceremony with that silhouette, this energy. And I was like, oh shit, it's you. I didn't say it out loud. I was like, it's you. It's you. Oh shit, it's you. This is the soul I connected with. I was like, oh my God. I ended up telling him a couple weeks later. A couple weeks later, we were engaged.
Before you freak him out on the spot, yes. I was like, look, I was just in an ayahuasca ceremony and Mother Aya showed me that you're my soulmate and I just met you this second and you're the one. It's like, my life.
But I remember that when I shared this story with you, I later found out that you had a similar experience of asking the medicine. So tell me.
I borrowed your intention.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a bit different. It wasn't the reason that I was struggling in love for decades was because of what God imprinted on me from my mom. The biggest fear was because I felt that my mom, as a child, I felt that my mom abandoned me because of her mental illness, because she wasn't there emotionally. She left, right? Is that it was this scary feeling in the first journey that I did. I saw myself as this kid against the world and all these black demons. You know, the Mother Aya showed me what happened with my mom as an experience for me as a child. And so I was living with my mom because my parents were divorced. So her being taken away, it's like you had that last foot of the chair and someone pulled it out and everything just crashed, including 10 years of suicidal thoughts, PTSD, you name it, from everything that came. So there was a real fear of leaning on someone, like the same in a similar way, to put all my weight on someone and really love them and trust them and for them to die, to be taken away, which is ironic that the beginning of the year he almost died. You know, he had a terrible accident and he almost died and he was super scary. And I was very proud of myself to be able to hold that and not panic. And I was like, I was his rock. And I was like, yep, I made it. Like, if I'm here and I'm not freaking out now, then I made it. But with the time, so I've done so much work and I've worked on everything in me and I'm a coach and I know how to heal these things. And I worked in the same way with other coaches and I still couldn't shift it completely. And I was like, okay, Mother Aya, that's the only way to move it. Because something that's rooted so deep, that's not moving from anything else. And I found, you know, over 30 years, the most effective somatic methods for healing traumas, which is what I'm using, because I was trying to heal my own body and heal the PTSD, which is now a non-issue anymore. And so I really searched high and low for 30 years for the best ones and found them and using them on me and on others. But the fastest way to get to the root of something that's so rooted in you is ayahuasca for me. So not to say that there aren't any other things, but for me, like, that's ayahuasca. So as soon as I heard you kind of going like, oh, this intention, and it's like, dee-dee, you know, my antennas went up and I was like, oh, let me try that intention. So I went and I used that same intention and I went through the craziest journey in the jungle in Peru. And for me, that's the place to be. And the reason I say that, the jungle in Peru, is because you're not just doing the plant medicine, the ayahuasca, you're also doing the plant dieta. You're getting assigned through drinking every morning a plant master guide who's with you the whole time and who's there to support you towards what you want. So I got the Sígueme Sígueme, which is basically the follow me. I do speak Spanish. So Sígueme Sígueme is follow me, follow me. And that's for love, abundance, and luck. And I was drinking the Sígueme Sígueme every day. I actually created now a little perfume, which I'm going to launch at one point, of like the Sígueme Sígueme. It's like, I've got this and I'm using it all the time. And it's like, it gets men to also attract it to. The maestra said to me, it's like, spray this all the time when you come back. And I'm like, I go around and spraying this thing on me. It smells really good, the Sígueme Sígueme. So, so I basically went in with this intention and doing the Sígueme Sígueme throughout the week. And I had the craziest journey, but I'm talking about the second night, which is the biggest night. The first night, the medicine gets to know you. The second night is the biggest night. The third night is kind of like the closing night and what you need to learn to do. The second night was like the craziest night I've ever had in my life, I think. I fainted twice. I pooped all over myself. You name it. Like, everything that everybody fears would ever happen, happened all of it in one night. And it's not typical. I mean, I've gone on many journeys. I've never had one like that. And when I say I pooped myself, I don't mean I was in bed and just went like, boop, boop, boop. It means that I got up to go to the washroom because I felt like I was about to purge that way. And I moved way too fast. And the medicine was so strong that I fainted. And as I fainted, I wasn't in control anymore. So it all came out. And it wasn't, and what was even more interesting is that when I fainted, I wasn't fainted. I was with Mother Aya and she was talking to me and I was in consciousness. I've never had that experience. And at one point I opened my eyes and I realized that everybody's above me. So I realized that it looked on the outside like I fainted, but she was talking to me and teaching me. And then they tried to help me get up and it was too fast. The medicine was so strong that they looked again like I fainted and Mother Aya was talking to me. I've never had that kind of experience. It was fascinating. Anyway, so to make a long story short, and don't worry, everybody, I got cleaned up. They took me to the shower and you don't stay in that the whole night. And they brought me clothing and, you know, watched out to make sure that I was okay and not fainting again. And it's like, there's always a facilitator that watches out for you if anything happens. And again, that's an extreme situation. That's not something that happens to every person every time that you go. But in all honesty, I was laughing on the way to the washroom. And I was like, and the reason I was laughing, like really laughing, was because one, I did not feel shame, which was amazing. It was so liberating. And the second one was like, I was like, oh, it's coming out. Yay. Like whatever was blocking me is coming out. So I was so happy. I was ecstatic happy. I was just like, oh my God, like, yes, thank you inside. Yes. Like, oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Take it out. Take it out. Whatever it is. I don't even need to know what it is. Just take it out. And here's the really interesting thing is that it was a big night. I didn't really know what I let go of, but what I did know was, like one of the things that happened is that when I went in, I said what the intention was to the maestra and her two children who are also shamans with her, and they sing the Icaros. And the Icaros, like you said beautifully before, they sing it to activate the medicine in you, but they also know your intention. They're not just singing the Icaros, they're singing it into your intention. So if you're saying, I want love or to let go, they're singing a type of Icaro that would work for that. And they know all the that is going on in the room and the medicine guides them and what you need as well. And at one point they go also with a stool one-to-one and they sing to you inward. And there was the final night when the maestra said like her partner was sick and she wanted to go to the hospital. And she said, do you mind if we push to everybody? Do you mind if you push the final night? And I said, no, I can't because I have to get on a plane the next day instead of having an integration day. And after a full day of ceremony, your body is shot. You need to sleep, you need to eat, you need to build up the strength again in the body. I'm not going to be able to get on a plane the next day. I'm not going to have the energy to do that. And that night they came in and, you know, we always fear, you think, okay, I hope they don't abandon me in this now because I you know, I took away something that they wanted. They came in more devoted than any other night and gave their all and sang Kikaros the whole night and activated the medicine like to help me with what I wanted. They won my heart. They won my heart that night. I was like, oh my goodness. That was part of like, we'll talk about it afterwards, a part of that decision to lead the trips and facilitate with them. And I came back and the funniest thing happened, like with you, what happened is that something shifted with what I released and what I need to let go of, something shifted in how I was looking at it. So there was someone under my nose for half a year and I danced, you know, I came here to Portugal and I had a dream to drink, to dance Kizomba. And I started learning how to dance. It was like a 5-6 year old dream. And there was this one guy that every time I danced with him, we were like, what just happened here? We were like on cloud nine, but we don't even speak one language in common. He speaks Portuguese and Creole and I speak Hebrew, English and Spanish, and we couldn't even talk. So I didn't even consider him an option. You know, he seemed like simple and like you say, we've got our checklist and I couldn't communicate to get to know him. So like, where would that go? You know? And then when I came back and we were dancing and every time we danced, it was like this magnet, we were getting closer and we're constantly like, no, no. And it's like, we're getting, no. And I just, as soon as I came back, it was like my heart got it. You know, I was like, oh, you mean him? Okay. you mean I need to open up my heart to him. Like, and I've been preventing that. That's what you're telling me. And Mother Aya's like, you're getting it. So I opened up my heart. And then we've been together for almost a year now. It's the most divine, incredible love I've ever had in my life. I never had a love that's so incredible and loving and supportive and affectionate and We dance and we have fun and we're both Scorpios. Meu Deus, it's like it is sexy and it is seductive and it is all of it. And he's so present and he's so beautifully manly and masculine and at the same time soft and incredible and divine.
I'm so
So
happy
thank
for
you.
you.
Yeah, so thank you for lending me your intention.
Yeah, well, I want you to write about it in the next edition of Manifesting Love. I think it would be awesome.
Okay, will
Yeah.
do.
So tell us a little more about, how this evolved and how you felt called to lead retreats with the same medicine family. You've already done one, and I know someone here is going with
Still with
you
them.
this year. And
Yeah.
yeah, I'm excited to be
Hi,
supporting.
Janelle.
Yeah. Janelle. All right, I guess it's out of the box. So I've already put in the chat this link to the retreat. But tell us how that came for you. The
So
call
let's start
to
with the fact that I've never had, and this is the beauty of it, because Mother Aya is the one that's driving me, not me. Like she's the one that's making all these decisions. I'm just surrendering to them and just saying, okay, if that's what I'm supposed to do. So I never had any intentions to become a facilitator. I never had any plan. I never aimed for it. I never tried to get to it. As soon as I was there, and the way, I've been to enough ceremonies now. I was there twice last year just for me, before leading a retreat, and it was nothing like what I've experienced anywhere else, not in Costa Rica, not here in Portugal. It was something that was 5 steps above everything. And this specific family, like I said before, won my heart. And when I came out of that retreat, I came back after a couple of months and I did another retreat with them, which was again phenomenal. And when I came second retreat, I already launched a retreat. So first of all, Mother Aya was the one that kind of set me on that path. And it was like, oh, put this, and when it suddenly becomes easy and you put this and this and this, and it's like, oh, suddenly everything works. And you're like, okay, Mother, I got the message. They want me to organize this. But it was because they were so amazing with me and they didn't have enough momentum yet. They were in the right direction that I also wanted to give back. That's how it started. And I knew that my clients, like a lot of them, would benefit so much from it because there's so many traumas that even with what we're doing, which has phenomenal results, we see like in a couple of months of 180, there are certain things that we can't eradicate unless you do something like ayahuasca. So and with a plant dieta, that's even, that's a whole other game ball. I now don't have the allergy that I've had every year after the second trip. And I didn't even aim for that. That was something that came with what I did. I did the Chirishanango. I was dieting with the Chirishanango, which was one of the hardest diets I've ever done. It's a more advanced plant that you drink. And my allergy is gone. And I've had years of like coughing and almost puking on the streets and like almost choking from it in the winter. So I didn't plan on facilitating. I started organizing the retreats thinking, okay, I just bring a retreat and I do all the somatic work around because I know that it requires a special preparation and to know how to come and emotionally for someone to guide you on it and explain to you. You go to the jungle, a jungle rough. People don't understand exactly how to land into all of this. And when I landed, I was like, oh, I didn't know that. Ooh, I didn't expect that. But I'm kind of adventurous, and most people need more of support in that sense. And the same when you're there, there's little support in like in some ways, but there's support like when you're in the ceremonies, there's support as a general thing, but not in like a full-on support. So an integration, of course, is something that I think is a must for everybody because when you come out of it, you need a translator. You need someone who's going to explain to you what you're feeling and how that links to your life and how to apply it to day-to-day life to be able to integrate that in. So I was like, okay, I'll create this package around and put the somatic healing. So I'm like preparing them and teaching them how to process emotions and then being there and supporting them. But I was never expecting more than that. I was like, okay, I'll bring them. And then they do the work. I guess, I don't know, maybe I sleep there or whatnot. It's like, and that's it. And then the next thing I know, they were like, no, you're drinking the medicine. We're going to teach you what you do while you sit. I was like, oh, okay, I'm facilitating. Okay. So it kind of fell into my lap. But in all honesty, now that I've done one, there are a couple of things that I would say. The first one would be that it's the biggest honor of a lifetime to be able to drink the medicine for the clients and not for yourself. And that's the big difference, is that I'm not asking for an intention for me. Like I go in with an intention such as help me be present and show me what each client needs, you know, guide me on what each client needs. And then Mother Aya guides me on that. And having like a shamanic family with that kind of like crazy wisdom and the maestras beyond her years who have received that download of wisdom for thousands of generations, you know, and for them to invest so much energy and to teach me these things and guide me on what to say, what to do, you know, like it's really like an honor of a lifetime. And the second thing is you know, before I did the first retreat, I was very careful about what I was speaking about the retreat because I knew the impact on me, but how can I explain it to others when I haven't seen my clients go through that? And I've gone last time with clients and it was incredible to see the change. Like the impact was just as impactful for them as it was for me. I had a client who came with stage 4 cancer and she came after her ribs were just breaking from coughing, you know, and she came back and now she's running 4 kilometers every day and she's swimming and she's like, I know it's the medicine, you know, it's a week of medicine that did that, and the maestra and her and the family. And I had a client who, for example, came with a sexual trauma. She was sexually abused and I was with her the whole night. She was shaking and she was terrified and it was such tough couple of hours being with her for her, for me as well. That was a lot to hold. And it was the most beautiful journey ever where I got to be her anchor. And she's never had an emotional anchor in her life. And that restored her trust. I've got goosebumps all in my body just thinking about it because it restored trust for her where she could never have trust. And it was so powerful. I couldn't believe that I was given this privilege to be there and be that for that human being and hold that space. So, you know, I was like, hey, let's organize a trip, you know, by Huasca. Like, I just put it together and I go with them and I landed into something so beautiful and so profound, and I'm so grateful that I can keep doing this and taking more clients and guide them and help them reach exactly what they want so they can have the kind of breakthroughs that you and I are talking about, and to be guided to do this work and to get to drink the medicine for others. It's such a selfless place where, like a parent, you can't just think of yourself, but you have to put yourself aside. Like the medicine, when it's in you, you have to learn the amounts that you drink so that you're present and you're not going into your process. And then if there's nothing going on and you go into your process, if someone needs you to be selfless, to let go and come back for that person and be there for them and be committed. And it's really an honor. It's just, it's an honor to hold that space and to be selected by Mother Aya and the Maestra, and they've invested so much in me when I was there. I couldn't believe how much they were training me and teaching me. I was like, wow, like that's amazing. So,
well, it makes sense given all that you've been investing and sharing with others over these years, you know, since I met you way back in 2017, that now you got poured into you and now you get to level up and keep pouring back. Well, I've shared in the chat the link to the retreat for this year. Caroline is asking, how does one prepare for a dieta? It sounds like Cookie's being called again to sit with the Great Mother.
Yes, that's a really good question. There is preparation, and preparation starts about 6 weeks before. And there's a whole file that we give to the people that go on the retreat. I say we because me and my team. So first of all, 6 weeks before, you start to get off any kind of antidepressants and any kind of medication that can conflict with the medicine. That's the first thing. And then you've got 6 weeks, which every couple of weeks there's changes all the way to you don't drink coffee, no fermented food, no processed foods, no salt, no sugar, no oil, no spicy food. No, there's a whole list of stuff. And it sounds really daunting at the beginning. Like, oh my goodness, like, is there anything left to eat? But I have to say that the first time that I did it, I've never felt so strong in my body. Like there's something about this cleansing because, you know, so for example, you'll take chicken and you'll fry it in the oven without anything. You'll just let it kind of cook from, you know, from the oven and then eat it. So everything is very bland because we're used to tastes, but it's not like you're not eating. You can eat rice, you can eat pasta, you can, just no sauce, no. You know, so if you eat well, you can have sweet potatoes, you can have like there's all these amazing things that you can eat, lentils, vegetables, but you're not going to have seasoning. So it's kind of bland, but if you're eating well, you're going to be so strong, and then you come to the medicine ready. And the preparation is not just for the food, the dieta, but it's also the emotional preparation, because the medicine already knows that you're coming, and the same as the plant master guides, they know that you're coming the minute you make the decision. So it's your commitment to them, and you're bonding with them already. And that bond cannot be actually broken also on the way back. There's like the guideline of what to do when you come back. And the shamans say that if you break it, there can be lethal results. Like you came for abundance, and then you break the first week you come and you start eating everything rather than following that. And then suddenly you have, breakdowns with financials, and like that can go the other way around. So you really want to make sure you're staying committed to that. So there's the dieta, there's the emotional connection to the plants that you're starting by cleansing and kind of showing that commitment. There's when you're there, your phone is taken away, and you have to be 100% in the moment. It's like a meditation at the same time, because you have to pay attention and hear the medicine and the plant master guide speaking to you. And if there's distractions, you're not going to do that. So most of the time, you're also not speaking to people, not because it's not allowed, because you're in it, which is why it's different when you do it in a jungle. So you don't have your phone and all the distractions. And then there's all the emotional somatic preparation that I do. So I teach you how to process emotions and how to move through them. And I'm there with you afterwards. So at the beginning, there's like preparation. We do intention setting. I teach you how to set intentions. I prepare you for the meeting with the maestra. We have a group preparation as well. So we do a lot of preparation before. Then there as well, you're getting a lot of support. So I'm there for integration. Like you don't I make sure that you get everywhere that you need to get to, because you don't have your phone. So I make sure you woke up. I make sure that you're eating. If you're not coming to the kitchen, then I send you the food to your room, like emotional support, and then the integration afterwards. So there's a lot of preparation, but it's before, during, and after.
Thank you for sharing so much. So I wonder if there are any other questions. I know we're a little bit late, but since we started a little bit late, anyone have questions for Chen about the upcoming retreat or other experiences?
Something I want to say about the retreat that is really cool, and also about the center. So the center doesn't take more than 15 people to begin with, and I limit the retreat to 10 people. So it's very intimate. They're the facilitator of the retreat, like the retreat center, and then there's me on top of that. So there's like usually they just do it no matter how many people, like the shamans and the facilitator of the center. And in this case, when I come, you have someone assigned to you. We last time there was somebody who came. There were other people that were doing it, and there was a person who came, and she came to the people who were the retreat with me, and because she saw the support they had, she was like, "You're so lucky that you have that." I was like, I just wanted to kind of go like, "Do you want to join us?" Where do you hold the retreat? The retreat is in the jungle in Peru. The closest big city or airport is Iquitos. You get to Iquitos, so you fly to Lima, and Lima from wherever you're coming, Lima and Lima to Iquitos. So from Iquitos, it's a 2-hour drive to Nauta, and from there with tuk-tuks into the jungle. And I meet you in Iquitos.
Now you keep saying in the jungle. I shared earlier that the guy that was running our his retreats, the shaman in Hawaii, everything was outdoors. It was like there was no toilets. You had to dig your own hole to puke and shit into. In your case, you say in the jungle, but are there facilities?
Yes. So when if they go into the page of the retreat, they will see photos on that page. So you can see what the tambo looks like. The tambo is the room that you live in. It's a wooden cabin. It's with a really comfortable bed with like a real mattress, and like you get a fleece blanket and your pillow, to sleep on, so you're comfortable. In your tambo, there's a washroom. The washroom you can sit on. It's a normal washroom, but you can flush. There's a bucket. There's like. And you put water, and that's what flushes it to go away. Showers, only cold water showers. There are two showers in the center, so you can go to one or the other, but it's like a shared bath shower. There's a kitchen where everybody comes to eat, or the food is getting sent to you. There's two malokas, the big one and the small one. That's usually where we do the ceremony. So, well, you have to understand that you're coming to someone's house. So when I say center, it's like the family lives there. So you have the maestra, Matilde, and then you've got her son and daughter, and then their spouses. And then you have all the kids running around, and then you have the animals. So it's like you're really with the whole family, which is part of the charm of the place, because it's like she's the grandma, you know, the grandma with the grandma, the grandma with the mother. I always the grandma. So it's the grandma and the grandma. It's really cute. And there are not many centers that are led by women in Peru. So this is one of the only ones, which makes it really unique.
Yeah, this is a great question about someone who's dealing with drug addiction. So, you know, in this community, we've talked a lot about some of the psychedelics that help with substance use. And most people talk about ibogaine or iboga. But what about your experience? Have you seen anyone or heard anyone going with this family getting free from addiction?
Well, it's something I can ask them. It's not, you know, one of the things that we do is that there's a process to get accepted. So you'll see that it's not automatic where you register on the site, but there's a due diligence to it because there's also a responsibility when you're taking people. So one of the first things that people do is they do a medical intake. In medical intake, I send it to the center and they look at it and they say, they flag if there's anything that's dangerous. You know, there was somebody who had something in her heart and that was dangerous. And they said, no, unless a cardiologist is going to approve you, we can't accept you. So they don't accept. And I like that. That was part of the reason why I chose them. The same as when I asked them right away and I said, if there's anything that happens to someone, what's the closest doctor? They were like 15 minutes away from here. You know, for me, those are things that are important when I choose a place. I want to know that we're safe, that we're doing due diligence, that we're checking this. So I haven't had someone who came yet and said, I have an addiction, would that work? I had someone who came with cancer 4 and I asked before, like, can that help? You know, so when there's someone who comes with something, I just send it to the center and say, what's your take on this? And then they tell me what their take is. And then we just give the honest answer. The answer for, and I'm assuming it would be the same, but you know, without asking already, but I'm assuming, but for cancer 4, they were like, look, it's known that there's like qualities to the medicine that can help with that. That cannot guarantee, but we've seen, you know, good results with cancer, whether it's improvement, a week is a very short time to do it, but it's a start. You know, that was the answer. It would probably be the same for someone who has an addiction, most likely.
Yeah, thank you for that. I don't think there are no guarantees. You know, the question was, you know, is there any guarantee that he will stop? Absolutely not. And that's true of all conditions, not just addiction. Going into this sacred journey, the plant is not just magic, you know, it does a great deal of the work, but we also have to be fully engaged emotionally, spiritually. So
what about people with a lot of food sensitivities and sensitive vocal cords that spasm easily? So first of all, food sensitivities, to begin with, there's not much left, you know, so we have to see what the issues are. But so far, you know, despite the fact that everybody has a lot of sensitivities these days, like allergic to this, like you're not eating meat, you're not eating oils, you're not eating, like, you know, so what is left is typically you'll have quinoa or rice with lentils, with like some cooked vegetables, with some fresh vegetables. So it doesn't really leave a lot of room for sensitivities, but like for things to trigger. But obviously, if there was something specific, let's say someone said, you know, I can't have cabbage because I'm allergic to cabbage, then of course, then you tell us ahead of time if there's any allergies or anything that you cannot have. And if there's something in that, then you're just not going to eat that. But food doesn't seem to be the issue because of the dieta. It seems to kind of neutralize everything that could cause problems because it's usually nuts or it's like some kind of oil or it's like, you know, like everything that's not allowed. So that's one thing. You can't even have fruits because you're going to laugh, but don't kill me. I'm the messenger. You can't have fruits because it conflicts with the plant dieta because the plants are jealous. So it's the same when you come and they say like that they recommend not using. I still use it anyway. I go like, let them get jealous. I'll do a little retreat for them. But it's like if you use shampoo because it's with flowers, you bring everything's natural when you bring with you. But they go like, you know, they could get jealous. I'm like, they need a retreat, don't they? Like the little master plant guys, they're like a little jealous. They're cute. So that's for the sensitivities. For the vocal cords that spasm easily, I would actually want to bring that to Mother Aya and find out if this is a traumatic response. So So vocal cords that spasm easily, like that's something that's there's a voice issue. Voice issue to me, what where I would dig and look deeper into is to see if there has been some kind of a trauma of not having your voice being taken away, not being heard, something that breaks, something where there's fear, and then to bring it to Mother Aya to see if it's possible to heal. One of the things, for example, that I discovered about my body reacts in extreme ways to the medicine. Most extreme, one of the most extreme ways that I've seen. But from what I've heard at the center, it's not the most extreme. But what happens is that when I get really close to releasing something, I tend to faint. So we kind of discovered that lately, that it's like it becomes so scary that I tend to faint. And I fainted 3 times already since I started in Peru. I've never fainted before in any ayahuasca ceremony, and I don't tend to faint in my life, but I fainted 3 times already. And one of the things that I'm planning on doing is to ask Mother Aya if she can help me meet that and integrate that into my body without opting out. Because I know that from the trauma with my mom, the only way I could opt out when it became dangerous was to cut emotions and not be there because it got dangerous at times. So it's probably linked to one another. So there's something there about the spasm and the vocal cords that is related to trauma that would be really interesting to bring that to Mother Ayan to start unpacking this, and also in somatic coaching sessions as well. We can dig deeper and find probably the root cause of it.
Yeah, and what you're saying also, brings up this idea of internal parts, whether that's with internal family systems or however you do parts work, that there's a part that's like, nope, too scary, checking out, phew, the fainting part. And as I saw Rosemary earlier, talked about how some of her protector parts got in the way when she was on an ayahuasca journey in the jungle. So it's very interesting if we have these parts that are like, nope, this is too scary, don't want to go there.
And then we cut off. So, and if anybody is not, is interested, you're getting that summoning, but you're not quite there yet. Feel free to, on the page, there's a way to book a call with me. It's an exploratory call. I really, because I'm in the medicine, I don't treat this as like a sales call where someone has to sign up. Someone was with me just now. We've had 2 calls and we explored it, and she came back and she really wanted to do it. And then it just wasn't happening. And it was really interesting because it was aligning and then it kind of fell apart. And she came back and she kind of felt shame. She was like, I did everything before. I didn't want to waste your time. And now it's like falling apart. And I said to her, there's a reason why Mother Aya is sitting up that way. You might not see it right now, but what my experience is that if she puts it together and it's really easy and then it becomes really hard and suddenly fades away, there's a reason for that. And I trust in that. So, because she was like, am I going to be able to come to another one? I said, yes, absolutely. It's like, and you'll see it might still fit for this one and suddenly falls like into place. Or if it doesn't, then just accept that. And I was really glad because by the end of the call, she just said, thank you. Like, I didn't want to call. I thought maybe I'll send you just a message and say it's not working and go. And then I decided to come anyway, and I'm so glad I did. I said, yeah, because it's the journey and being called. There's an unfolding that has to happen, and we have to respect that, and that's part of the journey, right? So feel free to book a call if that you're being called, if you want to start a journey. If not for this one, it could be the next one is completely okay. Can plant medicine help people with, you mean low reflection ability? Cognitively challenged. What do you mean by cognitively challenged?
And what do you mean by lie reflection ability?
It was a spelling mistake, like less intelligent, whom you cannot resonate, who can't be helped, like psychological speaking.
You mean like autistic?
No, less intelligent, like you can't tell them this is not reasonable.
I'm not quite sure I understand what you mean by that. Sorry.
I mean, people whom you cannot advise, this is good, this is bad, what they think is what is right, because they have low intelligence. Maybe it's low IQ.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I work with people, and that's where I aim to work with people who are ready. So if someone doesn't know what is going on or they're not able to be present, then I personally wouldn't take it on. Maybe there are other people that, but I need to be able to be with the person, connect with them, understand what is going on with them, to be able to communicate with them, to be able to support them. And that's where my genius happens. So if this is someone who's outside of, my bar, that's below my bar, I wouldn't take it on because I just don't feel comfortable. There was a client who came not too long ago and wanted to work with me, and it turns out he has a mental illness, and there was another one who came who has a disability where he's retarded, and I didn't take them on, not because I'm not kind to these people or because I don't feel that they deserve it. It's just because I don't have the specialty. And that's what I said to the person. I said, you deserve to get somebody who's going to hold space for you, who can. Because when you hold space for someone, you have to be fully committed, the same as the shamans are to me, I am to the clients, right? So if I don't feel in some way that I can hold that space for the person, I wouldn't take it on because it wouldn't be fair to them. They deserve my best, not my least.
Thank you for sharing that. You know, it is always tricky for folks to gauge whether someone would be safe or not, which is why we're having this call, because people are asking me all the time, where did you go? Where would you recommend? How do we tell if someone is a good or safe facilitator? Because people are taking advantage of ayahuasca being so popular now. And you know, we also have to be able to trust our own intuition. So I think, like you, in answering Beatrice's question, if someone didn't seem to have the mental capacity to go through what we in medicine call informed consent, like they have to know these are the risks, these are the indications, these are the things that could possibly happen. So this is not about intelligence, but if someone didn't have the capacity to properly consent to a journey, then I would say this is not for them. And that might be different. You know, we hear about this in the Amazon all the time. I would not take someone who was in active addiction, but there are places where ayahuasqueros feel comfortable working with it, but they have that direct lineage. So it's definitely something that we have to investigate and tune in. You were going to say something?
I want to add to it something that you kind of touched briefly in what you said, which is really important, is that safety. So where are you going is super important. There are so many places that are not safe. Before taking clients, I went there and I wanted to feel what it's like, and I wanted to see if it was safe, and I wanted to see how it would feel. And if you don't go to the right place, you could get hurt. I saw there was something at the beginning when I came in that someone asked about the protection. So protection is really important. And when you're coming to a center like that one, first of all, there's like they put plants all around and they create protection around the Maloka. The second thing is that they do ceremonies for protection, and then they're singing protections in the room. So just to tell you something that happened last time, I was there after the clients left, and I stayed for another ceremony for myself. And that night, there was this woman who came from another country and is part of the rest of the people that were there. And in the middle of the night, these crazy entities came out of her, and they were hissing in some language that sounded like Egypt or something. That, and it was like, and the maestra was singing to those entities to put them in place. And then her son was going around and putting protection everyone. I've never in my life felt so protected. Like, and I asked Mother Aya, and I said, "Show me the protection." And she showed me. It was like almost like a transparency shield around that was just so strong, but full of feminine divine. And I was like, whoa. And then they were teaching me before I left about how you hold protections, because they were saying that sometimes when I'm doing trauma work, some of the negative energy comes into me, and then that kind of fluctuates the abundance because it affects me. Because it's like if it meets something in me, for example, if I meet someone insecurity, meets insecurity in me, and then I get kind of shaky, then that impacts abundance. So they were teaching me about how to put protections, and there's like they're doing the mapacho, which is like blowing of the tobacco. They do a purge, a tobacco purge when you arrive. They do the flower baths when you're there, which put protections on you. There's so many protections. And it was interesting because that night, like that woman was hissing half the night and singing in crazy tones and things. And at one point I was like, I'm so tired after the ceremony was over. I was like, should I go to my room? And I knew that there wouldn't be like any protections in the room, and it would feel so different. And I was debating. Eventually, I was so tired of her. I was like, I'm going to my room. And it felt so different and so lonely in my room, like so unprotected, not unsafe, just unprotected. You know, like this, the whole center is safe, but it was so different in feeling. I was just done. But it's like the feeling, the difference of it was so incredible to feel what the protection does in such an extreme way. We're going, wow, like it's amazing what they put here. So where you are is extremely important. There can be attacks on you when you're in journeys. And if you're not in that kind of protection, you cannot trust the family. You're putting yourself in danger. So who you choose is really important.
Yeah, it brings up a whole question about cosmology. You know, some people come from cultures where they don't believe in entities or spirits. And I remember before I did my ayahuasca journey in Peru, I had been in connection with someone who said, "Oh my God, you can't do that. You know, you risk getting possessed." And, you know, they had all this like fear, negative stuff coming in. And fortunately, I have a different spiritual grounding and awareness that nothing creepy like that happened. But we do hear about spirits and entities being
And here's
released
what I
in
want
the
to say about
space.
that.
Yeah.
And here's what I want to say about that is that you don't have to believe in it. You just have to be in the space where things happen and you know. And, you know, my first experience, you're a doctor, you know, you're a scientific. So, you know, you've got both sides, the spiritual, but then that's what I love about you. You're like, you're both, and you can sit there and talk about neuroscience if needed and give numbers, but at the same time, you can go into the spiritual world. My first experience with people being possessed was in Cuba. And like my best friend was possessed by dead spirits in a journey like that was like what is called a tambor. It's a special Santeria ceremony. I mean, I've had so many experiences in the world with different cultures that are not, you know, that are spiritual. And there's no doubt if you were there that she was possessed. She was an old man and she didn't even know who I was, you know, for 8 hours. So you don't have to believe in it. I didn't go in believing. I just experienced enough stuff and seen it myself that you don't need to believe. You just, you know, it's true.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, in the training to become a psychedelic facilitator, there's a big debate about whether or not we should talk about, I mean, of course, informed consent, like the bad things that could happen. But there's a lot of debate about talking about entities and spirits because they say, well, if the person didn't believe in them and then you talk about it, you might influence their journey. So it's always very interesting for me to hear if people are open to sharing what has happened in retreats. That was
I'm
one
not
of
worried
my
about
fears.
Talking about it because I will influence their journey because I think that every person goes into their journey with what they, you know, what they need. As we said before, Mother Eye is going to give you not what you want, what you need. And even if you think about stuff, if it's not what you need, that's not what you're going to get. So that remains grounded in that. I don't think that it's something, from my experience at least, it's not something that creates the reality in that sense and takes you away from what you need. You just lean into what you need anyway. But what is important to remember is that you have to let go of expectations. So when people hear about different journeys, if you start to build expectations of what it's going to look like, to let go of that, something that I do in the intention settings, and I start to kind of break down all the expectations and prepare them to be prepared for anything, because you don't really know what's coming in that sense of what your specific journey is going to be like, and it's not going to be like anyone else's. And no matter how many stories you've heard, you have to let go of the picture and allow the unfolding to happen, because Mother Aya is not going to give you what you want. She's going to give you what you need. And that's what's going to happen at the end of the day. So just start surrendering, because that's it. You just got to surrender. It's part of the whole preparation. It's yeah.
Yeah. Well, in part of our prep, we have a bunch of guided meditations and journal prompts. And to your point, Rosemary, earlier, we have two guided meditations that are all about surrender and getting in touch with protector parts. So if you've got these internal parts that are already throwing up resistance or fear, or like you've had an experience in the past where they were trying to block, we do this process so that we can start to get to know these parts and why they feel so scared or so protective. I find that that's really helpful, because in my experience, the quote unquote bad trips that I've either had or witnessed have generally been based on not being able to surrender. It's not that they couldn't process scary material or things from the past. It was this resistance to what was happening that created tension in the body and just, you know, misery in the trip. So if you're curious about that, Rosemary, I can send you access if you want to check out some of these meditations, because people have told me it's been really helpful in that preparation to start really befriending these parts. Because in your case, as you wrote in the chat, the medicine in some cases can overpower your protective parts. It's just like, we're going to blast past it. But there can be ramifications, you know, as you know, with Dick Schwartz's work, he often talks about, if you go past the protectors to start working with these wounded parts, when you're out of that space, there can be a backlash. And so it's best for us to gain the permission and the buy-in from all of our parts to say, okay, we're going on this journey. We can handle this. And what Chen is bringing up is, when you know the space, when you know the medicine, you know the maestra, you know that you're going to be held, sometimes that can feed back into our protectors to say, yeah, I get it. You're scared. And we've got all this support. But
and you have the plan dieta.
Yeah.
And you have the plan dieta. And the maestra identifies for each person what it is that they need to strengthen in them. And she assigns them the plan dieta master guide based on that. And that master guide is going to help you create that in your life. So Chiri Shanango kicked my butt on that journey, but I've never come back stronger than that. And I got super sick, because that's what Chiri Shanango does. It makes you sick to make you stronger. And wow, when I came back from that, it was like, I couldn't believe the change. And I was suspicious when the maestra said, you're getting Chiri Shanango. And I didn't understand the name. So I said, Chiri what? And she said, you don't want to do it? I was like, what is going on here? What did I just sign up for? But I surrendered anyway. And then I understood why the suspicion. But I trusted the maestra. And it was one of the most incredible dietas I've ever had, that got rid of my allergies the first winter in probably 15 years. I haven't had a really harsh allergic attack. And I feel stronger as a human being. I feel more grounded. Like, that's Chiri Shanango. That's the dieta. So they're strengthening what is missing for you in your foundation with the dieta on top of the plant medicine, which is incredible.
It sounds like such an amazing experience. I look forward to, perhaps, if I feel that call, I know that I will sit with the Great Mother again. I just haven't been called recently, but it sounds like this family sounds really, really amazing. And I know I would probably learn so much, as well as, you know, the next layer of healing and evolution. Thank you so much for being here, Chen. I'm so grateful for our relationship, and so grateful to know that you are stewarding people in a safe and holistic way. In the jungle of
Thank
Peru.
Thank you so much for opening the community to me, and anybody who wants to come and explore with me, I look forward to meeting you. You know how much I love you and beautiful community.
Well, you heard it. Chen is happy to do a discovery call with you. So the link is in the chat. If you're watching the replay, the link will be also on the page. So thank you again. I'm wishing all of you safety in your journeys. Remember that we have a course, The Ultimate Guide to Safe Psychedelic Preparation, which teaches you about a whole range of psychedelics and includes these meditations and journal prompts and live calls with us every month, sometimes with guest speakers like today. So that's available. And if you're curious about providing prep and integration, if you're a coach, a therapist, a doctor, we have an upcoming certification in using the Cornerstone Process, which is my five-step holistic framework that I've been using for over 2 decades. We are certifying folks in using it for prep and integration. So if you know that you have clients that are going to fly off to different countries, and like Chen described, sometimes, you know, the maestras, they don't have this integration for you once you fly back home. That's what our certification program provides, so that you can help your clients be safe. So thank you. Stay tuned for more of these sacred medicine series. It's been good fun to host so many different speakers and experts and guides. So just know that if you have other questions, you can reply to any email you've gotten from me. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Chen. And I wish you a wonderful rest of your evening.
Thank you, everybody. Bye. Bye for now. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Innate Vitality Code podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, rate the podcast, and subscribe. This helps me with getting my message out to a wider audience. For show notes and other episodes, visit innatevitality.com/podcast. That's vitality.com/podcast. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series. Each month, I take a deep dive into the topics of holistic healing, resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. Just visit innatevitality.com.